Welcome to the Raising Grace podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. I'm the mother of three children, and I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm reaching out to regular parents just like you and I to help me find the best ways to help my kids and myself thrive. We all are different, you and I, and with a little grace, we can do this. Taylor Maltz is a mother of two children, including one special needs child. Taylor was thrown into parenting at the age of 21 when she gave birth to her child alone in an Italian hospital while her husband was deployed. There, she found out through a translator that her child had some pretty serious medical issues. She talks about the strength she has had to build over the past 7 years in parenting a special needs child alongside a great husband, team, and family. I hope you enjoy it.
Let's start off by, why don't you tell me about your family? Who you consider to be your family?
Absolutely. So my family I've created with my husband is my husband, Taryn. And then we have two children, McKinley, who is six, and Holden, who is five. And then branching outward, the family that I grew up with is my mother, Stephanie, my dad, Brian. And then I have three siblings, my brother, whose name is Will, my sister, Angela, and then I have a half-brother who is seven named Elon.
And your half-brother and your son are best friends.
They are absolute best friends.
And it is so fun to watch that unfold just on social media. And I'm so grateful for social media for that specific thing because I get to watch people.
Absolutely.
So, we'll come back to your family as well, but let's talk about like your upbringing. I remember when your mom got pregnant and it was kind of a big deal.
I would imagine.
Can you explain why that was probably a pretty big deal?
Absolutely. Yes. So my parents had me at 15. So growing up, my grandparents were heavily involved in my upbringing. Of course, when they graduated from high school, my dad joined the military and that took us kind of externally from that family unit. So they played a little bit less of a part as I got older, but they always were very, very supportive. And really, I just owe so much to both my parents and both sets of grandparents for what they just collectively did, because it really was an absolute village, because I can't even fathom being 15. And 16 and 17 and 18 and, you know, having this child that you had to figure out what the heck to do with while you're a kid yourself.
And while you're going to school and not working and who is supporting this child. And luckily they lived in a small town with both sets of parents there, grandparents there that were very involved in your life.
Very.
It always seemed like you had like three or four sets of parents.
Exactly. Yep. Which was exactly my experience as well. Is that like my grandparents really were kind of my extended parents, which not taking away anything from what my parents did, because my parents did an amazing job and I can't even understand how they did it. But they had such a support system, which really just, I'm super thankful for them.
Yeah. How do you think that part of your life has kind of shaped you to where you are now?
I think a couple different ways. I think because my parents were so young, I always had a very, very unconventional household, if that makes sense. Like my parents were so young, I really grew up with my parents. And so it was always much more of a relaxed household in the sense that they were really figuring things out as I was figuring things out. So I think that has produced a very relaxed personality within myself. However, at the same time, being the oldest, and I think growing up kind of with all eyes on you a little bit, because there's so many cooks in the kitchen, it also put a lot of maybe pressure on being responsible and being successful. And you have this example of these two people that have just put forth so much effort into success that you kind of feel the pressure that you need to follow suit. Like if they were able to figure it out, being 15, you know, making this wonderful life for themselves, then you have to follow suit and you have to kind of meet that expectation.
Right. And it seems like you did. I don't know. You were kind of famous in my hometown. I mean, it was a small town. We don't get a lot of 15-year-olds that have kids. Yes. And then keep them and then successfully raise them as they are getting married. And, you know, I can't imagine being in my 20s trying to figure out how to deal with my 9-year-old as it is.
I know. And as I get older, I think like, okay, right now I'm 27. So like, okay, I would have a 12-year-old. And like, as I get older, it kind of puts it into perspective more where it's like, okay, in this stage of my life, they were 20. In this stage, they were 25. Like in this stage, they're, you know, whatever. Yeah. And it's just like, I can't even imagine that. Like, right. Oh my goodness. And then thinking back at how really put together they were throughout every aspect of my life. And just like, you were so young. Like, how did you do that?
It's hard enough when you're older and you're mature and you have your life supposedly together, let alone younger. And I wonder if, you know, and ultimately I would like to interview your mom. Mm-hmm. But of course she idolizes you as her daughter. And I'm sure she would say, I don't know how I raised them. They were just amazing. They raised us. So, and it's just so great that you guys have such a wonderful relationship still.
Oh yeah.
And absolutely. That your sons get to be best friends. Like,
yeah. And who knew that is where life would take us as well, is that I have extended half brother who's pretty much the same age as my kids. And
yeah,
it's just a very unconventional.
Yeah. Yes. So cool. But also very unconditionally loving. Yeah.
Very much so. Yes.
We're so do you live, your husband is military, right?
So he is ex-military. He's not military anymore.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're not traveling around.
No, we live in Rapid City, South Dakota, you know, the same as my mom. And actually we live probably about 5 minutes away from one another. So I was a bit reluctant at first to move back to my hometown, but now that we're here and we're with our people, I couldn't imagine it in any other way.
Yeah. So why don't we start talking about when you decided to start your family? Because it's not like you were super old when you started your family. I mean, you're 27 and you have a 6-year-old.
Right.
So it seems like from what my timeline that I've seen is you graduated high school and got married like a year later.
That's correct. Yes. So I married my high school sweetheart as well. And he made the decision to join the military. So right out of high school, pretty much he went into the military and then he did, you know, all the initial trainings that's necessary. And then as soon as it was to a point where I could join him, we got married and just packed up and headed out. And his first duty station was actually overseas. It was in Italy. So we were just these couple of little 19-year-olds who just like picked up and left for Italy and we never turned back.
That sounds kind of amazing.
It was such an amazing experience. It was such an amazing experience. Like I would move back tomorrow if I could.
But then it became not as an amazing experience.
Right.
So get into that part.
Absolutely. So I was about 20, give or take, when I became pregnant with McKinley. And that is when we were overseas in Italy. And the pregnancy itself was completely conventional. Like everything was going as it was supposed to. And then it became time when she was delivered. And immediately when she was born, they realized that things were not as they were supposed to. She was born about 3.5 weeks early, so nothing crazy, but it was an unexpected time. My husband actually was gone for a training mission in Germany at that time. So I had her completely alone in an Italian hospital.
Like at 20.
I was a fresh 21.
You're just a baby.
Yes. And so it became apparent. They took her to the NICU and they did, you know, XYZ tests. And it was a couple of days before we got an official diagnosis. So officially she was diagnosed with congenital CMV, which is an infection that I contracted when I was pregnant with her. And it's not a big deal for anyone that isn't a fetus, but if you're a fetus, it has detrimental effects on your development. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the moments that we were under. The main thing that causes the developmental delay, from my understanding, is the calcifications on the brain. One of the symptoms of congenital CMV is calcifications on your ventricles.
Okay.
And so kind of loosely from my understanding, based on the number of calcifications that she has on her ventricles, is, you know, kind of what's been the consequence of her special needs, of her developmental delay. So
let's talk about that time you were in the hospital by yourself. When did your husband finally make it to the hospital?
Okay, so I began to have contractions in the middle of the night. And I went into the hospital probably at about 2 a.m. I had a neighbor drive me to this hospital, but she had a baby herself. And so she couldn't actually go in there with me because she had this baby and her husband was gone as well. Oh, geez. And so I had McKinley by 5:45 that morning. So it was very, very, very quick. Like everything happened very quick. And I'm kind of thankful that things happened so quickly because I didn't even really have time to think about it. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, okay, this is what we're doing. Like, let's just keep it going. Let's go. And so they brought me into the delivery room. And there's luckily, because I was a military spouse, I was allowed to have a translator. There's a specific, you know, I'll call it a company, an organization, whatever you'd like to call it, that were stationed at this hospital specifically for military families that were living in this town. So that I'm hugely thankful for, because besides that one translator, no one else around me spoke English. No one else around me
understood. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so they're trying to kind of tell me what to do through this translator, and nothing with an Italian way of doing medical things is as Americans we are comfortable with, I suppose. They have a much different way of doing things than what we kind of view as acceptable. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of had to just be at mercy of these strangers who don't speak your language. And like I said, I'm just really glad that it happened quickly because I did not have any time to think about it.
Thank God. So you're in a hospital, you don't speak the local language, you have one person that's your translator, and then baby's born and something's wrong.
Yes. So baby's born. And the part that's kind of a bit confusing to think back on now is that it wasn't even initially something that the Italian doctors were picking up on. Like looking back, it should have been the very moment she was born, they take her away and they take her to the NICU. But the reality was they took me and McKinley to a like multi-person recovery room.
And not just mom baby room area. It's just like,
no, I'm surrounded by various sick people, like different types of things going on. And I'm just like with this tiny little newborn, like just left in this recovery area. And she's like covered by a blanket because I didn't really know what else to do. And I was just kind of left there. Like I was just kind of left there to quote unquote recover. I don't really know what the point of that was. Mm-hmm. And it was an extended amount of time. It was probably about maybe an hour or so, maybe even longer, until a nurse finally came over to like check on me. Basically, I would assume to see what the hell I was even there for. And she noticed that I had this little baby. And then she said, you know, whatever she said in Italian. And then she grabbed this baby and then swept her away. And so there was even a very delayed reaction from this hospital, which luckily there's no medical consequences for that. But that was just another example of just how kind of loosey-goosey everything is over there. Mm-hmm. And how it's just not to the standards that we are used to, I suppose.
Well, but you also couldn't ask for help.
Exactly. You couldn't ask for help. And like, I was 21, and like, I was completely alone. And so, yeah, I just kind of stayed there because I'm like, I need someone to approach me. Like, I don't even really know what to do.
You don't know what to ask. And if you have a baby, you're like, well, it's alive. So
exactly.
I guess I'll just hold it.
Normal. Exactly. And so the translator's gone at this point as well. So like, I'm on my own. And so they take McKinley to the NICU at that point. And then they take me at a certain point. I don't remember exactly the time details there, to a more private room, like more of like a finalized room, I guess. I don't really know. And then that's when doctors start coming to me with information. And now luckily at this-
In Italian.
Okay. In Italian. And eventually translators kind of cycle through as well. But luckily at this point, I've probably been at the hospital for maybe 4 or 5 hours. And then one of my neighbors at this point comes to the hospital. So that was nice to have at this point someone there with me. And so this person is like jotting down all of the notes of what these people are saying as they're coming through, which I'm very thankful for. And then I was just kind of in a little bit of a shock. Like, I didn't really know what to think. I didn't really know what to make of anything that they were telling me. And I just kind of had just gone through something like kind of borderline traumatic. And it just all was a lot to take in at that moment. And fast forward through the day, my husband, Taryn, he gets there that evening, thank God. That evening, maybe about 6 or 7 in the evening, he's able to be there. And so it was, you know, maybe 13 or so hours before he was able to meet me there, which I'm really thankful that the military or the unit that he was in was very reactionary. They figured it out. They got him situated to where he could come back to where we were pretty swiftly, which is more than I would have ever expected from
the military. They have a reputation, and yes. Fast is not. Yeah.
Typically, things like that don't matter. But yes. So that was that initial first day. And then I would say as they kind of figure things out on their end, whatever that may look like as a, you know, a NICU doctor, we got final results maybe when she was 3 days or so of like, okay, congenital CMV, this is what it is. This is our course of treatment. This is our actions. This is what it looks like, basically.
And what were those? So you don't know what your baby's life is going to look like with CMV. Like, it could be a lot of different things, right? Mm-hmm. It could be, like you said, it just depends on the calcification.
Exactly.
And you mm-hmm. won't know until she grows. Like, it just.
Exactly.
So yes. you come home. When did you even get to go home with her?
Okay. So McKinley spent about 8 weeks at the hospital. So she spent 8 weeks at the hospital. They let me stay for quite a while to kind of help process. I stayed there for probably about 5 days. But yeah, she needed to be on like an antiviral medication. I don't remember the exact name of it, but whatever antiviral medication they needed her on for at least 7 weeks, but really however long her body can withstand it without her. I think it was her platelets that were the issue. Like, you can't have platelets that drop down a certain level. Because then it becomes more consequential than what it's worth. But as long as the platelet levels are as they should, they wanted her to be on it as long as possible. But for the initial weeks of life, the only way to receive that is via IV. So that was kind of the main thing that was holding us there. And that was also kind of the confusing part as a parent, because like all of these doctors, especially the Italian doctors, they were looking to me to be, to have a certain reaction that shows that I understand what's happening. They wanted me to be sobbing every single day. Like, they wanted me to have like breakdowns that I were uncontrollable.
Oh my gosh.
And so I wasn't necessarily doing that because I think that's just not my demeanor. And
you were so confused about everything that you're
so
like,
confused. And like, this kid is by most accounts healthy. Like, things are going okay besides the fact that she has this congenital CMV. And so I just always took the stance of like, well, I'm focusing on today and I'm not mm-hmm. focusing on tomorrow and a year from now, 10 years from now. Like, today I have this sweet little newborn who's doing just fine. Mm-hmm. And so they would come to me and they would say, we're just worried that you don't understand exactly what's happening or what this means because you're not upset. So I'm just like, I don't
know. You're like, I'm 21. I don't know what you're saying. I'm just trying to figure out if my baby's going to live. And it sounds like what you're saying is baby's going to live. So I'm good.
Exactly.
And you're like, if you tell me baby's going to die, I'll break down. Baby's going to live. So
exactly. And that was kind of the dichotomy of it all. Yes. Is that I was kind of course, in that time, it is a grieving process of what you think your child's life is going to be, I suppose. And so there was that. But then also, I just think, especially from the area that we're from, you don't really let emotion show in public necessarily.
Oh, is that? Okay, that's where it comes from then. I just thought that was my point.
I know, right?
Oh, it's the Westerns. Okay, it's, I guess. I've got that feeling.
Yes. So like,
I've learned how to be a little bit more emotional, but yeah, I wait for the emotions. I'm like, wait, tell me what the real problem is before I need to know if this is a real emotion. I'm not going to fake emotion until you tell me what the actual problem is.
Right. Exactly. And so they were like wanting me to have these breakdowns, which I was having in private. Like, it's not like I wasn't having these breakdowns in private. But when I'm in this office, when I'm in essentially a professional setting where I need you to take me seriously, I'm not going to have a meltdown in front of you. And so,
I need to stay coherent to understand what you're telling me, because I have to understand it through a translator. And are they getting every question answered that I need answered?
Exactly. And then also, I realized very quickly, especially in that time frame of my life, is as a special needs parent, there is a lot of pressure on you to be taken seriously. Like, you have to present yourself in a way that they take you seriously, that you don't get walked over, that you're an advocate for both yourself and for your child. And so even in the beginning stages, I was experiencing a lot of needing to present myself in a certain way, especially as someone so young, that I'm not someone that you could just walk over and that you can just like tell what's going to happen, you know, or like, I guess discount as someone that you need to handle professionally, I suppose.
Right. I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So McKinley finally comes home.
Yes. So when she was about 2 months old, she spent 1 month in the NICU and then 1 month in the pediatric ward, where one of us had to be with her in her room 24/7. And so that totaled to about, 8 weeks, give or take. And during that process as well, on the military side of things, it's becoming pretty apparent that we are going to essentially be kicked out of this duty station, because they medically, by the military standpoint, she's a little bit too big of a liability for where we're at, meaning there isn't American specialists that can help in the way that would be adequate. And so we were also in the process of doing what they call a compassionate reassignment. So that meant in the very, very, very near future, we are going to pack up everything and we're going to go wherever they think is compassionate for us to go.
You don't get to say, I would like to be stationed in South Dakota, please.
Yeah. No, we'll get
you in the lower 48. That's what you get.
Exactly. Basically, we are going to bring you somewhere where, from a TRICARE standpoint, you can go see an American specialist is basically what it means.
Well, that's good, I guess.
Which is good, but it also just kind of adds to the shock factor of like, okay, so everything is changing. Like, our perspective on what we thought parenthood was going to look like is changing. Our perspective on like how the next couple years of our life are going to go is changing, like, which isn't something that we were not used to, because that is kind of the military lifestyle as well, is like, okay, you really shouldn't plan for next week because you don't really know what tomorrow is going to look like. So it's something that you have to grow very comfortable in. So we were in Italy for about another couple months, where we kind of were just coasting. We saw some Italian specialists at the Italian hospital that kind of made sure that she's where she needs to be. And then we moved to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, when she was about, she would have been 4 months old.
Oh my gosh, that's a whole lot.
Yes.
That's a whole lot. And you're 21 and 22.
Yep. So then we're still 21. I turned 21, maybe 10 days before McKinley was born.
So you're both 21.
Yes.
You know, by your parents' standards, you're basically like full grown.
Right. Like, I just have grandkids.
We're like, have you been doing this for like 6-7 years? What's your problem?
I know. Yeah. It's like, you don't have kids in elementary school yet.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. I just try to think of myself as a 21-year-old going through that. And I was such an idiot. And I'm not saying that you were an idiot, but I was a dumbass. Like, I was really dumb. And I can't fathom what I would deal with. But I think what life has taught me is that you deal with what comes at you.
Yeah, very true.
You just do what you have to do. And that's what your parents taught you. They're like, we got pregnant, we raised you. That's what you have to do.
Very, and very true.
You have a child. She has disabilities. Okay. That's what we have to do then. That's what we're doing.
Very good point. Yeah. We're just like, okay, these are the punches we're rolling with. Let's keep going.
What else you got? Yeah. Bring them up.
Yeah. Very, very much so.
So just a sidebar, because I dealt with, when I was going through infertility, we had the option of adopting an embryo with the potential of having CMV. They said potentially, yeah. And I called your mom and I said, Stephanie, Taylor just had a baby with CMV. I've been watching this. What do I do? She said, Sheila, the more I've learned about this, like that baby, if you know in advance that baby could have CMV, they may not survive the pregnancy at all. So if you're willing to have a pregnancy that could end, terminate early under no consequence of your own, then what do you want to do that? And I said, no, I mean, if you're guaranteed a live baby, even if like, what does CMV look like? And she's like, it's not about what CMV looks like. It's if the baby makes it to term. And that's
right.
That was the scary part. And so thank you for posting, for having your mom post and being so open about it, because so many people don't even know. And also, all you got was basically a cold, if that. You don't know.
Essentially zero symptoms, right? And that's like kind of the scary part as well, is that it's so easy to contract and then you don't know anything about it. Like,
and then nobody's testing for it.
Right. No one's testing for it. And even furthermore, say there's even a world where there's no testing, at minimum, there should be education on what you should and shouldn't do. Because I was like,
well, I've learned now, like, don't kiss, if you're pregnant, don't kiss your toddlers. Don't like snuggle them when they're sick. Like, you have to wear a mask. You have to really protect yourself.
Exactly. And at the time, I was kind of a little bit of the perfect storm as well, because apparently it's super common in Italy, is what I've heard as well. And then I was also working at the on-base daycare with 1 and 2 and 3 year olds. And so if I would have been educated on what I shouldn't do, I guess, or like how I should protect myself, it would just be more beneficial, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Just knowing. Knowing is everything. And say you get a cold and you ask to get tested for CMV. Do you know if they can do that?
I have no idea. I'm not sure.
They can even test for it. You know, after that happened to you, I was so careful. I mean, not being able to get pregnant is one thing. And then getting pregnant. And that was my biggest. I'm just like, I need you to test for CMV. I need you. And I don't even think they're like, you're off the rocker. Like, stop.
Right.
Exactly. Yes, I am off my rocker. Okay. Yes. This is all difficult.
I had so much anxiety with my second pregnancy because of that experience with my first, where I'm like, oh my God, what if I just do something and I don't even know?
Right. Because that's exactly what happened.
Yes. Yes. I know. It's just crazy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So you get back to the United States, you get to North Carolina.
Yes. Yep.
Do you have any military people there that you know? Do you know anybody?
Okay, no. Our time in North Carolina was pretty short-lived, because fast forward a little bit, my husband did kind of really short notice have to deploy. So we were there for about 5 months. We were in North Carolina for about 5 months. And keep in mind, about half of that time, probably, my husband was in and out of trainings. He was gone. And so that time in life, there's also a lot of isolation, because especially as a military spouse, it takes a while to even build a community. Mm-hmm. And I was in such a point with McKinley where there just wasn't much of a community at that point that I could dive into, I suppose, if that makes sense.
But, and were you concerned about her immunity at all? Like, was her immune system compromised at all, or no?
So luckily, her immune system was never affected. Luckily, from like a medical standpoint in that sense, she was always, I guess, just like a general newborn, general baby.
Right. So it was brain development.
That's correct. Yep. And then trying to do an antiviral medication to try to mitigate the effects as much as possible.
So that antiviral medication is ongoing.
No. So it was ongoing. So let's go back a bit. For those first 8 weeks or 7 weeks, it was done by IV. So she was getting that, right, that medication periodically while she's in the hospital via IV. Then when it got to a point, if I'm honest, I don't really know what the indicator is, because everyone spoke Italian and I don't really know that much of what the indicator is that allows them to begin oral medication of the same sort, but fill in some necessarily an indicator. And when she was able to do the oral, then we went home. Now, periodically, they would do blood work to check her platelets, because like I said, they want to try to do that for as long as possible, but without negatively affecting her body. Mm-hmm. And so when it began to affect her platelets, in her case specifically, she was probably about 7 or 8 months.
So were you giving her the medication then?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yep. Like, I want to say probably twice a day she received that orally once we were able to go into the home setting.
Okay.
But it made it a little bit tricky as well to kind of navigate going from Italian care to moving back to the States and doing just traditional care at American hospitals. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of things, they aren't easily translated. Like, for instance, for the longest time, we didn't even know for certain what her birth weight was in pounds and ounces. Because obviously she was weighed in kilograms or yeah, kilos. And so for the longest time, I did my own translation of that, but I didn't translate the ounces correct with the decimals. I was doing it as if there were 10 ounces in a pound without even noticing. But then I realized, oh, no. This is a fraction of 16 ounces. And so for the longest time, I was telling people the wrong ounces that she was born with. And so that's just a small example of just how it wasn't always the easiest to kind of navigate her care in a different country.
Because you're getting all her medical records back in Italian. And then they have to be translated by somebody who understands medical jargon to translate it correctly for the American doctor.
That's correct. And even something like a doctor today would like to see her initial MRI. And then I have to say, I don't have access to that necessarily, because I don't even know how to access that hospital. And I'm sure I could go through the military in some fashion if I absolutely 100% needed that. But the short answer is that's not easily obtainable for you. And so,
what is it going to give you? Is it going to give you a cure for this disease that we've got now? Because if it's not, it's going to take me 10 weeks of phone calls and dealing with the military and dealing with an Italian hospital and dealing with a translator. Yes. What is this going to gain us for you to see this original MRI?
Exact conversations that I have.
Is this your curiosity or is this necessary?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So those are the things that kind of make I keep saying unconventional, but it just all is very, very unconventional.
You're just making it up as you go.
Yes. And then when Kinley was about 4 months, we realized that we were pregnant with my son. And so then it's like,
I didn't realize they were that close together.
Oh my God. Yes. They're 13 months apart. Oh my gosh. And so then it's like, hokey dokey, here we go. Let's just keep her rolling, apparently. Oh, yeah. So that also was a very stressful time.
And then your husband went on deployment and everything was all great.
Exactly. Yes. And that's when things really started to shine. Yeah. So, my husband found out 3 weeks before he deployed that he needed to deploy. So we had 3 weeks to pack up all of our stuff and move ourselves to South Dakota, because I was 6 or 7 months pregnant at that point, and I had this special needs baby. And I'm like, I know no one here. Like, I have to get out of here. And so then that's when I moved back to my hometown here in South Dakota, was because in a couple months I was going to be having another baby, and I had this baby with special needs, and I need to be with my people for this.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Good call, Taylor. Good call. Yes. Jeez. I'm stressed out right now. Just listening.
Oh my gosh. Story. Yes. Oh my gosh.
So how has it been with McKinley? What has that been like? I know you don't really know anything different. You know, it's not like, oh, I guess you do in a way that your son does not have special needs.
Right.
And has an insane amount of energy, just like his uncle does.
Just like his uncle does. Yeah.
So and what has honestly, that been like?
Absolutely. And honestly, I think that in a sense, having my kids so close together was a bit of a blessing because, A, when I started watching Holden develop typically, it just made me realize as a parent that I can just take a breath because I'm like, this is what a child just does. Like, I haven't really done very much special for this kid and he's just rolling. He's just crawling. He's just sitting up. And like, it just allowed me to realize that I don't have to blame myself if McKinley can't do these things. And it just let me realize that like, it's not my fault. It just made me feel like I didn't have to every second of the day try to fill it with something productive to assist in her development. Because like before I was able to kind of witness Holden's progression, or really a typical baby's progression, even when she was a newborn, I just felt like, okay, so we have to have her do something productive right now. Because what if she falls behind because of me? Mm-hmm. And so that really was kind of a bit of a blessing. Because then I got to kind of witness what typical development was like in a typical relationship between a parent and their developing child and realize that there isn't that much you can do. Like, you don't play as significant of a role in your child's natural development as what I was worried that you did.
That's comforting.
Just had a special needs. Yes, yes.
You know, and I think that's so typical for parents. Like, we think we can control if our kid gets into MIT or not. We think we can control all of this stuff. And I know, you know, I have adoption to contend with. And, you know, I did IVF and like, did I do this? Like, did I do that right? And what is genetic and what is nurture and what am I causing and which, what are they going to go to therapy for? What is it?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
You think you can control all of this. And I look back at my childhood, I had a great childhood and my God, I need so much therapy right now.
Right.
And that is just right in my, that is right in my cells. There's no fixing that. Like, I don't think had my parents sat next to me my whole life and made sure that I did everything perfectly, I would not need therapy. I'm just an anxious person with regular depression. Okay.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And it's so important to realize that, we don't have that control over our little people.
Mm-hmm.
And even more important for you to realize that, you know, your child has special needs and you just need to roll with it.
Exactly. Yes. And I think that allowed me to have much more acceptance for meeting McKinley at where she's at instead of trying to force her to be where all of these professionals that are surrounding her feel like she needs to be at.
And right. Because that's a lot of pressure to put on you to say that I have to do 3 hours worth of therapy for her every day so that she can get to this level. And then then what? And it's always going to be what?
And at any given time, McKinley has give or take like 7 or 8 professionals of various types that are involved with her. And each one has different things that they prioritize and that they think needs to be your priority. And they are very free to add their own criticisms. Like, I have been criticized from every which way by being a special needs mom. Like, they think just because like this child has special needs and when I was younger than I'm young, that they can just nitpick everything that I do. Like, I have never been spoken to about Holden the way that I'm spoken to about McKinley, like ever. And so that's another thing that like, you have to put on a certain front for these people in a way that keeps you from being stepped on.
Oh my gosh.
And that's not something that I ever have to worry about with Holden. No one ever gives me quote unquote advice about Holden ever from a professional standpoint, like a medical professional standpoint. But with McKinley, it's very unique if someone doesn't.
Yeah.
And
that's
so
frustrating.
Yeah. And I don't really know anyone else that's in this boat as well. And so, like, I've always just kind of had to navigate it on my own a little bit. And just really had to learn to follow my gut on what I think is appropriate, what I think is not appropriate. What advice should I be taking? What advice should I just let roll off my shoulder? Like, it's, that's always been something to navigate too, is that you get all of this information from all of these different specialists, and then you have to sit there and sort through and prioritize your time from, you know, a mother's perspective of other kids, you know, a student's perspective, like going to school, like a full-time job perspective, like you're going, you have to work, you have to earn money. And then you have a spouse that transitions through deployments and military and being a college student himself and now being a professional. So it's just managing all of these different elements and just deciding what's worth my time in this moment, you know?
So you're almost expected to spend 12 hours a day doing your own therapy. They're asking you to do all the therapies with your daughter. So as a special needs parent, I mean, how do you afford that? How do you afford that?
And that's the thing, is that you really just do the best you can. And then at the end of the day, you're like, this is just the best that I had. Like,
this, I gave it my best today.
Yes.
And you're taking her to these therapies. You're taking her to these doctors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Who pays for that? Do you have insurance? Does the government, does TRICARE pay for that?
Oh, we just have typical insurance at this point in our life. Yeah. And that's another thing to balance is, yeah, the financial side of things as well.
Well, you have to fight for that insurance too, don't you?
In a certain sense. Yeah. And in a certain sense, you have to be the one that kind of decides what you're prioritizing that money to go to right now. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go to these people and say, I'm not prioritizing what you're prioritizing right now, because right now she needs this instead of this. And your thing will come, but it's just going to come later on. And maybe not when you want it right now, but like, I have to be the one that kind of facilitates all of this and just know that there's something right now that's more of a priority than what you think is a priority right now. And like, sometimes those are really hard conversations to have.
Well, and it's got to be hard for you to make that decision. And it's not fair. It feels like it's not fair that you have to make the decision of what's most important, because every doctor is saying what I'm telling you is most important.
Exactly.
My thing is more important. My thing is more important.
Exactly.
And you have to do your own research based on what they told you and make your own choices based on what's best for your family at that time, financially, emotionally, physically, like.
Exactly. And
how are you taking care of yourself, Taylor? Like, what are you doing for yourself to not lose your cookies?
Oh, that's a great question, Sheila. I know. That's like when people are like, what do you do? Like, what are your hobbies? Like, well, I don't really know. Like, I'm just getting through the day, okay?
You seem to have a great personality. You seem to have a great sense of humor. You're around family now. Like, I know your mom helps out. Your sister's still, she's senior this year, right?
My sister's graduated, actually. She is graduated. But yes, I would be lost without my family. Like, oh my gosh. Like, yeah, they are our rock. Like, we're so thankful to have our group of people here that help us as well. Because, like, we're by no means doing it alone. Like, yeah, I have my mom that helps me. I have my sister that helps me on my husband's side of the family. He has his siblings here and his mom that help us as well. And so, yeah, there's just so much help that's happening. But at the same time, that's also a lot of cooks in the kitchen as well. And they have their own opinions of what should happen with McKinley and how they think that things are run. And I always kind of have to carry the burden of their grief with McKinley as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they just choose to talk to me about that as well, which I am just super cool, super thankful for.
You've got to be really strong. How is it? Strong-willed. It's just, you've got to have a strong front, and I think that's what you said. You've got to have a strong front, and you have to not waffle on your decisions. You have to be like, this is how it is. This is what I'm choosing for our family. Yes. And is your husband, like, is he helpful in that way too?
He is absolutely helpful. I kind of tend to take more of the driver's seat. And then he is a very supportive kind of passenger seat. Not saying he's not involved at all, but typically I'm going to be the one that kind of is more of the facilitator and more of the one that kind of keeps track of things, kind of a little bit more of the one that makes the decisions, that gets kind of the flack from people as well. And so our experience in that sense, it is much different. Of course, he has a very, very active role as well. But it just seems like kind of sometimes the mom takes a little bit more of that sometimes.
Well, I think that's the case in most situations.
Yes. So he helps so much, but yeah.
As long as he supports you, that's, I think.
Exactly.
I'm willing to take the driver's seat on a lot of kid stuff.
Exactly.
If you just sit there and say, yep, you got this. I'm behind you. If something comes up, like, I got your back. Like, I'll be your security. What do you need? That's what I need my husband to do for me.
Yep. That's 100% the case. Absolutely.
So how is McKinley doing now?
So McKinley is doing really well now. She is in first grade. She has a team at the elementary school that they go to that we really enjoy this year. She is followed by a paraprofessional, and she has her designated special education teacher. And they just seem like they have a really good plan of integrating her into like mainstream classrooms, as well as kind of giving her that additional support that she needs. And it's always really fun going into the school because everyone loves her so much. Like,
well, she's your child. Like, she has your personality. I can see that just online.
So we're always really thankful to have, to see her support system as well, and to see her, really her community that she has. Because before even elementary school, we had her in a daycare that was connected to therapy services. And so it was just the perfect scenario for her in that sense as well. And I was always so thankful for them, because I remember at first when I went back to work, I was utterly terrified when she was maybe about a year and a half or so, maybe just shy of 2 years, like giving her to strangers. Because like, I just have to trust that you're going to know what to do. Like, you're not going to neglect her. Like, you're not going to just like set her in a corner or something. Like, I was just terrified. And to have a center that was so therapy focused, as well as the willingness to integrate her when they didn't necessarily even have to, we were always just so thankful for. And then she kind of rolled into elementary setting with the kind of the same motto that we were witnessing, which we've just been always so thankful for, is that she's only ever been accepted with open arms, which of course is what you would expect, but it's just always so reassuring to see.
Yeah. You don't know. You don't know. And it's not like you have any experience with this and you know, like, so you are going to be a little bit more protective of your daughter.
Yes.
That's so great. She's 7, 8.
So she is 6.
She's 6. Okay. She's 6.
She's 6. Yep. 6, almost 7.
Is the same age as my daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She turned 6 in July.
Oh, hey. Yeah. Kinley turned 6 in in January. They're only like 6 months. 6 months.
Yeah. My daughter's in first grade as well.
Nice. Yeah.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. And the other kids treat her great.
Yeah. They love her. They love her so much, which is really great to see.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, she's always so giggly. It doesn't take much to make her laugh. And she loves music and she loves playing with other kids. So I'm sure they enjoy making her laugh.
So is your current standing on everything that all her therapies and stuff is just day by day? And you're not looking 10 years ahead. You're just like, let's just see what happens this week. Let's see what happens tomorrow. Or how much can you think about her future?
Sure. Yeah, that's correct. I try to kind of, even from a survival standpoint, look very short term with her. If I try to look too long term, it honestly kind of gets a little bit too overwhelming and a little bit too kind of daunting and a little bit too much to tackle. But I've always found that if I'm just focused on her developmental stage and where she's at right now. And like, I see that she's happy. She's well developed by her own standards and she's healthy. Then that I can handle, you know, like that I can handle. And I understand how to meet her needs today. Even if I can't predict what her needs are tomorrow or the next day, I know what she needs today. And I know that we're meeting what she needs today. And she's happy today. And that's sometimes all I can really afford to focus on. Because if I look too in the future, then it's so unknown that it feels very scary.
And that's kind of the prognosis is you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And like, that's usually really hard for other people to kind of accept is that they want me to give them a trajectory. And then I have to just kind of say, I don't know. Like, I don't know. No one really knows. I just know that like, we're just giving it our all today and that'll make tomorrow better.
And otherwise she's healthy.
Exactly. She's a very healthy kid.
She's healthy. She's just developmentally.
Yeah.
Like she's unable to walk, right?
No, she can't walk.
She can't walk. And can she communicate?
She can communicate in her own way. She's very good at communicating via gestures. She's kind of starting to use some small words. Like if you put it into perspective of a traditionally developmentally child, maybe like what like a 9 or 10 month old would do, where they're kind of starting to like make some sounds that are words, and they're working on communicating via a device as well.
Okay.
It would be seeing a picture, clicking that picture, the word that you're thinking in your mind spews out into the world.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then that's your plan.
Exactly.
And you have an amazing group of people that are helping you. So you don't have to worry about it as much anymore. You're not like, I have to spend 12 hours a day doing this. I have to spend this amount of time. Like I have people so that I can live a life.
And that's very true as well. Yeah, that is true. I've never thought about that. Yeah. Like from the perspective of when I was a stay-at-home mom when she was a baby and I felt like it was all on me. Mm-hmm. That is a good point that now she is in different settings where she has different support systems and it is a lot less on us. That is very true. Yeah.
They are working on therapies. I mean, that's what their job is. All day, every day. I've seen those parents in our school and they're constantly working with those kids. Yes. Everything is a lesson.
And they're such valuable.
You can come home and relax and you can relax.
Right. That is very true. Yeah. They're very valuable to kind of bounce ideas off of as well, which you're right. I didn't have that before. That is very true. Mm-hmm.
So if you could go back to 20-year-old Taylor or, you know, thinking about other families that are just getting this diagnosis or finding out that their child has special needs, what's your advice?
I would say go easy on yourself. Like I would say go easy on yourself and focus on your child right now. And like, don't get too existential about the next 20 years or even the next 5 years. Like focus on right now and also follow your gut and don't let medical professionals make you feel like you're a bad parent because you're not doing things exactly how their degree is saying that you should. Because the reality is there are a lot of other factors that come along with real life that often they overlook and they're not sensitive to. And so despite not checking off every single tiny box that they want you to check off, you're still supporting your child as you should. You're still giving them an environment which allows them to flourish. And you're still offering the love that they need, sometimes even more so than the exercises or the appointments or, you know, anything that's outside of the home.
That's such good advice for parents without special needs kids too. Maybe just today is the day to sit and snuggle in front of the TV. And today is the day to just spend one-on-one time with your kid in the park or not sign them up for one more sport or activity or thing like that.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Very, very true.
Thing.
Right.
What are you getting your degree in?
Oh, elementary education.
Oh yeah. What are you going to teach? Mm-hmm. What are you thinking?
Well, that's a great question. In reality, it's really whatever grade level I can get a job in, but preferably I like fourth grade the best. I like fourth graders the best.
They're son is in fourth grade.
Oh, yes, I just love it so.
He's got some attitude. He tore a book apart this weekend because he didn't want to read it. Like, that book didn't belong to you or me. So now you have to buy a new book and again, read it. So there's that. It's yes. Real great. I'm sure you'll have a blast.
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh.
So what is giving you, what is giving you hope today? What is giving you, you know, what are you looking forward to tomorrow in 5 years for yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I am nearing the end of getting a degree. I have a few more semesters and then I'll have a degree under my belt. So I'm excited for what that will bring us both opportunity-wise as a family, as well as kind of achievement-wise for myself. So that is something that we've kind of been working on for quite a while. After my husband got out of the military, he went back to school. And then our plan was to have me go to school when he was done with school. So this has been kind of a long time coming. So it's been rewarding to kind of start getting to the end of the tunnel that we've been working on for so long. So I would say that's kind of what we are and I am looking forward to on the horizon here is both of us having degrees under our belt, being in a position where we can allow financial opportunity for our family and just kind of start seeing the fruits of our labors a little bit.
I am so impressed by you. I can see why your mom made me interview you first. You know, I don't want to sit there and say, oh my God, you're so strong, because you're, this is just who you are as a human being. And you're just walking through life, however it hits you. And you're just like, bring it, let's do the next, what else you got?
Yeah.
You know, and it's impressive, and you're not letting everything get you down, and you're not, you just seem like such an upbeat, positive person. Is that, I mean, am I wrong? Are you just making this up for me today? Are you just acting like a fun person?
I mean, I like to see myself that way.
Well, I think you definitely are. And I think, you know, let's get this out to as many people as we can and just kind of share that, you know, kids with special needs are still amazing kids, and it's not going to break you as a parent. It's going to build you as a parent. It's going to build you as a human being. And hopefully that's the message that we can share.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity to share.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Taylor. What an incredible story of a mama bear's love for their child. She really is an inspiration to mothers everywhere. Just a reminder, neither me or my guests are parenting experts. We are all just doing the best we can with the information we have. Don't forget to give yourself and others a little more grace today.